This is a special showcase episode of the Round Table Podcast, 20 minutes with Brian Lincoln.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Humphrey.
And I'm Dave Robison.
And you're listening to the Round Table Podcast, and this week's 20 Minutes With.
20 Minutes With is when Brian and I have the opportunity to sit down with one of our guest hosts and peel them like a grape. Talk to them about their craft, about their creative process, and hopefully gain some insights and some new avenues of exploration as all of us continue to explore the craft of writing in the speculative fiction genre. And today we have science. Yes. Brian, when I first got into podcasting, you've heard me talk about J. Daniel Sawyer and Philippa Ballantyne. Mm-hmm. Among those opening experiences was, the Full Cast podcast.
That's right.
And folks, this is of special interest to Brian and myself, because as you've heard us mention several times in the past, Brian and I have both worked extensively in radio theater and audio drama with the Rabbit Hole Radio Theater Production Company back in Colorado. Yep. So our guest host, Bri, is a fellow audiophile and audio producer. His audio production credits include many episodes of the Dune Steve podcast. He's worked on episodes for Journey Into, Behind the Screams, and the My Epic Heals, which is a World of Warcraft healing podcast. He's been a vocal performer for Cowrie Catchers with Abigail Hilton, Dark Running by some hack by the name of Justin McCumber. I have no idea who that is. we just interviewed. Sorry, Justin. And also Chris Lester's Metamore City. He's directed or performed or produced in numerous full cast audio dramas, including HG World, a zombie podcast, Giant Gnome Productions, which does one of the best Star Trek audio productions out there. He is, of course, the co-host of the Parsec Award-winning Full Cast podcast, sharing the mic with the talented Abigail Hilton, where they cover all topics regarding full cast audio productions, from the creative to the technical to the business end of the process. It's an outstanding podcast. He's written a novel called Malcontent, which is in final revisions and is being cast for full cast production. And he does science. He is a physicist with experience in, and I just love saying this, nonlinear dynamics, biophysics, biomedical research, and genomics. And is currently a postdoctoral researcher at Princeton University. Brian, please help me welcoming to the Skype line, good master Brian Lincoln. Brian, thank you so much for being on the Roundtable Podcast.
Well, thanks. That's quite a long introduction. I guess I've been doing quite a bit the last few years.
Yeah, you've been a busy man. Busy man.
Well, I do have one correction to make. I did finish my postdoc at Princeton, so I'm not currently there.
Ah, see, and this is the hazard of trusting LinkedIn as a reliable information source.
Right.
Excellent. Brian, I need to ask, with my co-host and my background in audio drama, it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk to a fellow, you know, audio drama, radio theater person. And I wondered if you would speak, having written a book and also been so active in full cast audio, for our audience members who might be interested in exploring full cast productions of their works, what did you discover, and I'm sure continue to discover, as the difference between a full cast script and an audio book? What are the big differences between the two for you?
Well, an audio book is really just the literal word for word portrayal of a story as it's written, like a novel or a short story. And an audio drama comes from a script. It looks more like a movie script with different character tags, and it's just dialogue. I guess you can work a narrator into some movie scripts, but in general, with an audiobook, you have the narrator. A full cast audiobook is one where you have someone narrating, but every voice actor is voiced by, or every character is voiced by a different voice actor.
Do you find in the creation of these events, I mean, just in terms of tempo and pacing and rhythm and structure, what do you find the differences between an audio, between that more conventional audio book format and the much more dynamic live full cast radio theater production?
I think one of the big advantages of it is that you really can get something out of the characters that you can't get from a single person that's doing all the voices. Some people are amazing at it, and some people actually prefer to listen to a single read. It's like somebody just sitting down and telling you a story on their own. But when it comes to doing something full cast, what you're allowing is for different actors to bring themselves into the different characters, which maybe wouldn't be there when the interpretation comes from one person. So you end up getting, you know, certain scenes. I always like to try to produce things that have some sort of emotional impact, and you get that a lot more strongly when there are different voices acting in it. So yeah, it's much more complex, but I think the rewards of doing it that way can be, can really be astounding.
Do you find there are significant differences in the structure of a full cast production as opposed to a conventional narrator read?
Well, typically when you're building one of these things up, what you'll do is you'll have whoever narrates do everything.
Right.
You'll mix that down. You'll basically have the effect of audiobook there. Of course, if they're playing, say it's a guy reading the narration and he's, you know, probably not seriously throwing himself into the female roles or whatever, just sort of saying the lines as a placeholder.
Sure.
And then you end up overlaying the other voices in. Now, how complex you decide to go with the production is really going to be up to the producer. You can do things where you bring in sound effects to accent things that are in the story. Although you have to be careful with that, because if somebody says, oh, and the gong sounded, and then you wait 2 seconds and hear a gong go off, it's kind of redundant. But there are ways to have the little sound effects in the background accent the story, but still leaving certain parts of it to the imagination, because that's the point of having the narration still there and not doing an audio drama. In an audio drama, you really have to, that sound will have to describe that gong, because no one ever said that a gong was there until you heard it. But in an audio book, it'll be described by the narrator probably.
Sure. Sure.
In audio drama or an audio book, how much do you feel that the actual point of view plays into the success of it? Have you found that that a first person point of view tends to be more successful for the parts of narration?
I don't know that it has to be one way or the other in any sense. I don't even know that there's a distinct advantage. One thing is that if there is a narrator first person, you'll tend to have the narrator also voice that character. Right. Otherwise, if it's third person, you usually want the character not to be voiced by the narrator unless they can really come across as a different person.
So
which some of the people I work with can do, which has always impressed me because I can't.
So really a third person POV is probably best for that type of if you're going to include a narrator into your audio drama production.
I think most things I've done have been third person, yeah.
Okay. What kind of advice, you know, with the explosion of audiobooks and audiobooks coming out there, I think a lot of creatives out there are actually looking for a way to sound distinctive, to separate themselves from the crowd, and are really taking a hard look at full cast productions as opposed to just a simple read. And certainly checking out the Full Cast podcast would be an excellent resource to pursue that with. But what kind of advice would you give to somebody who hasn't done that but is looking to do so? What would you advise them to look into and be prepared for as they launch into this epic journey?
The first thing I would say is to be aware that audio production is an art form and not a marketing scheme. If you're doing it to try to gain audience, but you're not into the actual art form itself, you're going to regret the lost time that you threw into it. You have to like, you know, maybe you have some affinity to audio drama or old time radio or something, and you want to give a crack at it with something that you've done. I decided very early on that I had an interest in working with audio, but I was pretty smart about how I ramped up. I started out volunteering for single short stories through Doonstief, the Doonstief audio fiction magazine, and I've done, I think, 12 for them now, each one better than the last. But if I started doing a novel at the beginning without that experience, it would have been terrible. You can hear the learning curve that I have if you go through my backlog with them.
Yeah, and Brian and I can totally back you up on that piece of advice.
Oh, yeah.
Dear friends, listen to Good Master Lincoln. He's telling the truth, brothers.
My most recent interview that I did for Fullcast was with Alicia Goranson, who did The Mask of Inanna, which is a really good audio drama that's out there. And the time that she mentioned, which is probably accurate for most of us, is about 2 hours of work per minute of final audio.
Yes.
Absolutely. To give a sense of how much. And so I'm doing a full cast production that's going to be probably something like 16 hours long. So you can get a sense of what kind of undertaking that is if you think 2 hours per minute.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge, huge deal. Dave and I talk from time to time about how, we have theater backgrounds, and a lot of the people that come into this have theater backgrounds. And one of the things that I was always told, because I went into directing, was that writers should not direct their own pieces. They're too close to them. They have all of these preconceived notions, and they're not able to look at it with an objective eye. Would you say the same thing in terms of producing? I've got a book in my drawer I'm interested in maybe doing something with over the summer. Would it be better for me to take that on as the producer of my own thing, or would you recommend finding somebody to produce it?
I think it depends on a couple of factors. One is your own ability to, for example, if you're going to do it full cast and rely on mm-hmm. other actors, you have to give them certain creative license with the characters and not direct them out of interest. If you're too hard on them and say, it has to be this way, damn it, you know, you're not fair to them because they're bringing their creative interpretation into it. So you have to, in order to do something like that, be willing to work with other people and realize that even though you're producing it, it's a collaborative work. The second thing would be, in order for somebody else to produce for you, you'd probably want to make sure it's somebody that's better at it than you are. Otherwise, right. You'll find it to be an exercise in frustration. Now, people like that might exist, but it's tough because, you know, if you're doing something like this, like I've always done this volunteer release things, Creative Commons. If somebody was going to ask me to do a whole novel for them and it ended up being paid, I wouldn't even know where to start there because it's just so much work.
Yeah. That's like 6 months. I mean, it's not.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And plus we all have day jobs. So, you know, we're doing that in our spare time. Sure.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Brian Lincoln after this brief promotional break.
Hey, Mick. What should I put in my intro?
I don't care. Just so long as you don't do the story so far.
Yes, I know, but how will my listeners be reminded of what happened so far?
Get the episodes out quickly?
Yeah, that's the right one talking.
Have you fixed your timeline? You know he doesn't like when a story jumps back and forth in time.
No, I'm still rewriting the whole thing so that it's not in first-person narrative anymore.
And what about your cast?
Oh, shut up.
View from Valhalla, the website for podcast novel reviews at www.viewfromvalhalla.com.
Now let's get back to the conversation with Brian Lincoln. Brian, there's a misconception, and I will say that again, a misconception that creative people come from creative backgrounds, like artists and musicians and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And in my own experience, I have found that to be a complete and utter fallacy. And you're a classic case. Your background is clearly not only science, but fairly hard science. Can you describe how it is for those of our members of the audience who maybe are in a similar environment and are feeling, well, I'm not a creative person, but I would love to try and write a book. How does How does the creative process and the scientific, you know, the analytic process, how do those dovetail for you?
Well, science is interesting. I mean, science comes from working at something for a long time. People have this misconception that the best scientists are just born geniuses and that doesn't take effort. And that's really an unfortunate assumption. And maybe some of that comes from the way science is portrayed in movies and things like that. But science comes from hard work and creativity in the same way that I think a lot of professions do. And the one thing that science really ingrained into me that I've carried over into anything that I try to do in a creative way, which involves writing and producing things, is that if somebody's done it before, it's not interesting. So basically, yeah, if somebody did that experiment, you either take what they learned, you know, maybe you need to do some things to convince yourself that what their conclusions were correct, but you know, you're not going to publish that because somebody already published that. So okay. It's not interesting to the community. So my role in science has always been something of an inventor. Usually I end up involved in projects where we're trying to figure out a way to measure something that hasn't been measured before, as opposed to having a lab with all these, you know, expensive pieces of equipment and you're trying to find a new question to answer with existing equipment. I'm usually involved in trying to build something, and it's usually led in some sort of a biomedical direction. I've worked in several, I've had two postdoc positions so far. Plus my PhD work was 5 years of research with laser trapping and trying to detect cancer that way. And every step along the way has been, okay, what do we know? What are the questions? And what can we try to do to get at the answers? And it's a long, slow process. And I think writing can be that way as well. If you think that somebody can sit down with a story and just, you know, however long it takes to get from page one to page 500 or however long it is how long it takes, is just a complete wrong way of thinking about it. It's a process of building it. You have to, you know, get through the story. Then you have to put as much serious effort into editing and fixing things as you did in the initial writing of it.
As Pip Ballantyne says, learn to love the whip.
Right. And, you know, I take a very scientific approach to everything that I do because that's the way that I was trained. You know, it's why I release a how-to podcast as I'm building it. You know, that was partly inspired by Merle Lafferty doing I Should Be Writing, where she started podcasting before she was a published writer and just kind of put herself out there. And I said, you know, it might make sense to share my learning curve as I get into this stuff as opposed to, you know, putting it out there and then having and by the way, here's a 1 hour, you know, summary of how I got there. You know, everything's out there. And by being an educational podcast, which is my goal, it's sort of timeless. It's not about, you know, entertaining people, you know, month to month or every other week or whatever. But it's about having something where people can go back. And sure, some of the stuff gets outdated as you know, especially the marketing stuff, as things change in the internet space. But the idea is, you know, there are episodes where I'll have, you know, how I did some mixing to get the room tone out of a vocal performance, or I'll have some sort of a how I built the sound effect from scratch. And those kinds of things are intended to be a learning tool for people, not, you know, trying to promote myself, but just trying to share what I've learned.
Sure. Right. And that's the beauty of that environment. I mean, it's not just a matter of as you say, the technical process, although that's invaluable, but you've also got the technology that is constantly evolving and changing, plus the cultural evolution that goes on out there. I mean, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, audiobooks was stuck on tape and CDs. And the internet opened things up. So that's fabulous.
Computers have made such a difference. I mean, part of the research that I've done usually has involved, in addition to building some sort of a device to measure things, when you're dealing with biology research, you tend to be recording, taking video of things through a microscope or whatever. And you suddenly realize that, you know, I was sort of there in, you know, around break of 2000 and around there, where you're trying to save, you know, hundreds of thousands of pictures a day, and how do you have the space on all your computer systems to record that? How can you process that data? How can you even look at all that data in a reliable way without taking 50 years to do it, you know? So you end up doing a lot of of that, and it all became possible because you're sort of pushing the limits of what you can do. So, you know, it's the same way with, you know, podcasts became possible because we have these devices that could store them. If we couldn't put an MP3 of an hour-long show on a device and carry it around with us, you know, these things wouldn't get around.
Good point. Yeah. Excellent point.
And speaking of research, you're kind of a unique resource. And one of the questions that we wanted to pose to you is a lot of writers don't have, you know, a very strong science background. Where would you go, or where can writers go if they need to get info on science or on technical aspects of their novels? Is there, do you have any advice for how to do that kind of research?
Don't be afraid to try to approach scientists, especially young scientists like graduate students. They probably, you know, you have to take what they say with a grain of salt, maybe, because they're still learning, but those kinds of people are just all about what they do and probably would love to talk to you.
Great.
You know, if somebody approached me with a specific thing that they were trying to solve, you know, my response would probably be to sit down and have a conversation about it. And if I was interested enough in the topic, I'd probably write something up with references for them just to say, okay, here, I know that we had this rambling thought here, you know, as a coherent explanation of what I meant. Because sometimes when you're talking science, you can't, you know, if you write a paper that in science, that's a pretty drawn out process, because you don't just sit down, same thing with writing a novel maybe, but it's even like 10 times worse, because every single sentence you have to back up and really have thought about, and it's based on other references and things like that, and how everything fits together. How you present the information has to be done in a way that is not assuming anything that isn't explained.
Absolutely.
It's tricky in that regard, but...
Would you recommend approaching professors as well, or...?
You can, but they'll be busier. Okay. That it's possible. But I think the people with more time are probably the grad students and the postdoc. Well, postdocs never have time, but they'll probably love to have a distraction.
Any online resources that you could recommend?
Not anything specific. There isn't, that I know of, there isn't really a sort of network of that sort of thing, but there probably should be. I'd love to be involved if there was.
Okay. Not Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. No, I think the key is to try to approach people that are in the space. It depends on what your topic is. Maybe you can find a podcast. I mean, there's a wonderful podcast called the Brain Science Podcast that's all about how the mind works and trying to understand those things. And that's a topic that could be talked about forever, and it's why it's a long-running podcast, probably.
Sure, right. Sure. And I know there's podcasts out there about like the science of Star Trek,
and that
would lead to all kinds of things, and possibly other resources as well. So yeah, hit the podcast community, by golly, there's a lot of good stuff.
Look at social networks. If you find somebody who's a scientist on Twitter, maybe you can ping them and ask them a question. I mean,
awesome.
People in science usually. They're usually so focused on a specific thing that nobody else is going to be interested in that when they're asked to talk about more general things, sort of the idea table part of science, a lot of people will be happy to do that, because that's the fun part of science is sitting down, trying to conceptualize ideas. That's always been my favorite part of the process, is that sitting around a table with medical doctors and scientists and engineers and just trying to figure out a way to do something new.
Well, and that's great too, because in sitting down with them, you can actually, you know, direct the discussion and ask your specific questions in relation to your story. Whereas online, you might be constrained by typing and not wanting to send a big, massive dissertation to a very busy scientist.
Right.
So that's awesome. Real quick, because the clock is ticking down, but I had to get this question in as well, Brian. For those of our members of our listening audience that may not know what we're talking about between is the distinction between an audiobook and a full cast production, can you just list off some of the top audio dramas that are out there with full cast so they can get a good sense of the best of the best that's out there?
Sure. I want to first emphasize that full cast and audio drama are different.
Okay.
Audio drama comes from a script, like I said, and the best audio dramas that I know are things like, I've really enjoyed Star Trek Outpost, which I think we mentioned. HG World is the one I'm involved, that won the Parsec this past year. That's a really fun production. We're Alive is another zombie podcast based out in California that's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Leviathan Chronicles with Christoph is excellent. I've had him on Fullcast before. Love that guy. Those are the ones that spring to mind first from audio drama. Now, if you're going to talk about Fullcast production, then you're talking about, well, I mean, you've had Dan Sawyer on before.
Right.
He's done them. He does a very good job. James Durham did an amazing job with Fetidus, so I would recommend that one. He's a genius when it comes to audio. Let's see. Abby's story is great. Guild of the Coward Catchers. Probably the one that was most influential to me, the one that really inspired me to get started when I was walking around listening to something in Princeton, New Jersey, was Chris Lester's Metamore City. That was the first time I really just heard someone start to tell a story, have different voices and music that just hit in the right spot. The way he puts music in really works. And so it was at that point when I thought, you know, I could probably do something like this. And I just started volunteering and getting involved and offering a voice and learning how to do all these things. And so Chris Lester, you know, I think he's due to come out with his next novel at some point. I think he's still wrapping up writing it, but I'm looking forward to new stuff from him. Oh, he's actually in my story as a voice actor as well. So
perfect.
I get to work with him still.
Outstanding. The time has run out as it always does. And, Brian, thank you so much. This has been enlightening. Even for a couple of audio drama, nerds like Brian and I, we've learned some stuff, and, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time and joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. So friends, hit the liner notes for this show, 'cause we'll have links to all of those full cast and audio drama productions that Brian listed and any other resources that we've discussed during the course of this 20 minutes with Brian, anything else before we wrap up?
You're talking to me, Brian.
Oh, sorry. Right. God. I swore I was going to say it was going to be beer Bri for you and then full on Brian for our guests. So yes, Bri, yeah, no, anything else?
No. Everything. This has been fabulous, and I'm really looking forward to the workshop episode, because this is one of those things that I could probably come up with a billion questions and take up the whole rest of your weekend. But we're not going to do that. So yeah,
we'll save that for the next time we have Link on the show. Awesome. Very cool. All right, friends. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to help out the Roundtable Podcast, feel free to swing out to iTunes and drop a review on there. We'd love to hear from you there. You can also leave a comment on the post in the website itself. Drop us a line at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Otherwise, hang out. Stay tuned. In a few days, we're going to have the workshop episode where Brian Lincoln is going to be on with a fine young writer with an epic, epic sci-fi tale to be workshopped. It's not going to be missed, so do stay tuned. Until then, ideas are cheap, folks. The difference between a writer and a dreamer is that the writer sits down and does the work. Bri?
Go write.
Go write. Yes. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is at writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.